The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. When he saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he had sat down, his disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the land. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they will be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the clean of heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when they insult you and persecute you and utter every kind of evil against you falsely because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward will be great in heaven." The Gospel of the Lord. Be seated. Pooh and Piglet were walking down the road. "Pooh," said Piglet. "Yes," said Pooh. "Nothing," said Piglet. "I just wanted to be sure of you. What you commit yourselves to this day is to be eternally and everlastingly sure of the other. But maybe more importantly, you commit yourself to making yourself available for them to be sure of you." Pooh and Piglet weren't married exactly, but they teach us something important about what it means to be in communion with another person. And that ultimately is what we're about here today, is being in communion one with another. The prophecy from Jeremiah foretells days that come when God will make a new covenant. The first covenant had to do with behavior. Do this, don't do that. But the covenant which endures, which the church celebrates whenever it gathers, the covenant which began when both you were baptized and which you renewed every single time you've come to God's altar to receive Holy Communion, that covenant isn't about do's and don'ts. It's about whose you are, whose you choose to be. Today, you commit yourselves not only to loving each other, you already do that, but to loving one another in Christ, which is a very different thing. The word sacrament appears only once in the whole of the New Testament, and it's in what might be the most unlikely of places. It's in that passage from St. Paul to the Ephesians, which Elise unsurprisingly did not pick to be read here at Mass, "Wives, be submissive to your husbands," and so on. But if you skip past that bit and you get to the end, Paul says this marriage, which is what he's been riffing on for a chapter and a half, is a great mystery, the mystery of Christ in the church. That word mystery is what comes into English as sacrament, and it's got two words that are in it. It's a compound, mu, which is where we get the word mute from, and steres, which is a happening or an event. So the sacraments or the mysteries of faith aren't whodunits like Sherlock Holmes or howdunits like CSI. You're not mute because you don't know the answer. No, they're mysteries like what happens when you're holding a baby and your breath gets caught because you recognize the enormity of what you're holding. Or when you catch the eyes of the one you love and you can't imagine how you got yourself here. And then you remember you didn't. Someone else got you there the whole time. It's easy to get caught up in the affective love we have for one another, the sort of stuff that we tend to celebrate on a day like today. And it's not wrong, but it's never going to be enough, which is the reason St. Paul gives this exhortation. It doesn't matter how many I love yous you say if they're not backed up by the thousand little I love yous you do every day. You could stomp your feet and hold your breath and say, I do, I do, I do, forever, right there at the foot of the altar. But if it's not backed up with the little sacrifices that we make each day for one another, the words won't mean a thing. The love you have for one another can't be self-interested. It must be dedicated and devoted to the good of the other. And the confidence that I have that you're at least on the right track is that over drinks, when I asked you, why him, why her, you both said, I like the person I am better with them than without them. Not just I like being with them, doing things with them. We enjoy doing things together. We make great plans. You could do that with anybody. But if you're doing this right, he makes you better. And you make him better. It rejoices in the truth. And oftentimes in communion, in relationship with each other, we have to tell one another difficult truths. And it's way more than just, honey, it really annoys me when you. It means coming to grips with our own deep character flaws and allowing somebody so deep inside us that we're willing to allow them to touch those most unfinished bits and begin to massage them better. It means letting somebody else into that deepest part of yourself where your hopes and your dreams and your fears and your worries live, and letting them share them, and sometimes letting them change them. My grandparents married in 1928 down at St. Ambrose. It was a Thursday morning on the way to work. They didn't even have a night together until Saturday, mostly because neither of them owned a bed. Grandpa bought a bed, took it apart at the furniture store, and walked it up the hill to 10th and College where they lived. And he rebuilt that bed. And that was their bed, the first 40 years of their married life. And then when my dad married, that bed got passed on to him. And when my sister married, it got passed on to her. And both my grandparents died in that bed. And my mother died in that bed. Which means in my family, that bed's a kind of sacrament. You walk in and it takes your breath away. Because every living member of my family either came to be or died on that bed. Don't think about it too hard. You know some of those people. I asked you a month ago, what was going to be your bed? I'm not going to make you say it here in front of everybody. But by the time you walk out here today, I want you to know, together, what are you going to make that you can pass on? 100 years from now, you have a grandson who's a priest, I know this requires a lot of imagination, at least for Austin. 100 years from now, you have a grandson who's a priest. What's he going to be able to share of what you taught him about marriage, what you taught his parents about marriage, to be able to give to somebody else? That ultimately is the communion that we celebrate here, both the communion of the two of you in matrimony and the communion we celebrate at the altar. It's about a project that's more than any one of us. It's about what it looks like when the Beatitudes aren't just words we say, but passions we live by. It's about what happens when we stop measuring the quality of our lives by do's and don'ts, which are important, but by the quality of the relationships we maintain, by the depth of the love that we bear and show for one another. It's about being willing to take all those little nuances of daily life, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and especially those little sufferings, those little sacrifices, and bringing them here to God's altar, where they can be transformed, just as the gifts are transformed. And then they're returned back to us. So our fears may be no different, but they're changed. And rather than cause us to retreat into cowardice, they can spur us on to courage and bravery. So that our hopes aren't only pie in the sky for some later time, but something that we can work towards and accomplish in the here and now. So that our dreams aren't simply something which we murmur in the quiet of the night to the one lying next to us, but our dreams take flesh and blood here on God's altar and out there on God's altar too.